Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And Andrew, we start with the good, and we don't usually like to make the good martini. Republican leaders pulling legislation from the floor, but that's where we are today. The border security bill, which is kind of part of the piecemeal approach of the new Republican majority to the immigration question, in addition to efforts which appear to be not succeeding to stop the president's unilateral approach to immigration, some would say amnesty, that he announced back in November. But the first part of the piecemeal legislative approach was supposed to be this border security bill sponsored by Homeland Security Chairman Mike McCaul of Texas. The more conservative members of the House did not like it because it actually called for taking down parts of the fence, not completing the border fence, but using other more technological tools, I guess you could say, for keeping an eye on the border. There was also a lot of frustration of the fact that there wasn't internal enforcement included in this bill about what to do with people who overstayed their visas and so forth. And so the House Republican leadership pulled this bill from a vote yesterday, citing the weather. It could come back next month, but right now it looks like a pretty good win for those who worried that the Republicans didn't have enough teeth in their border security approach.
It's a good martini, depending on who you're asking in the Republican House. But if you're one of these immigration conservatives that's really looking to secure the border, this is good news. When McCaul first introduced this bill, people were just kind of, I guess, accepting it at face value. But some of the members of the caucus started sniffing around and realizing that it wasn't all that cracked up to be. This isn't what they were expecting from a Republican, you know, majority with control of both houses of Congress. They sort of, in the last few days, they caught wind of what was really in this bill, and it looks like they pulled it. Now, according to at least one article I saw, the leadership was saying it was the blizzard was the reason they pulled the bill last night. That might be the more politically savvy excuse for it, rather than saying, "Hey, we can't agree on we don't have the support for it." But yeah, I mean, if you're someone looking to secure the border, and more so than it was, especially with a Republican-controlled House, and you think you can do more, this is good news for that part of the party.
Andrew, what's the sense on the Hill of how this new Congress has gotten off to the start with the Republicans running the show with an even bigger majority, especially in the House, where there was, of course, the embarrassment over the abortion bill last week? Now there's this. There's questions about whether ultimately anything's going to be done about the president's unilateral action. What's the sense? What's the mood right now?
You would think that maybe everyone would be on the same page, but I do think you have these many factions, whether it's on immigration or it's on abortion issues, that are kind of maybe a little encouraged. They actually think they do have a little bit more sway, that they can kind of push things more to one way or the other. And I think it's actually causing some headaches for leadership because, again, I think everyone came in expecting, hey, we're all in this together. We got it. We won both chambers of Congress. It's a kumbaya moment for all of us. But it's so far been the opposite. I'm not going to say it's totally rocky, but I think people are sort of testing the waters as to see how much sway do we have? How much can we push around leadership on some of these things? And, you know, is leadership going to stand up to them? So I think everyone's kind of getting a feel for one another, sort of trying to get a sense of what these next 2 years will look like.
Well, on to the bad martini now. And it's a bad martini that we pretty much knew everything we know now several months ago, but it's been confirmed now, at least in terms of charges against former U.S. Army soldier Bo Bergdahl. He's the one, of course, the Obama administration got back from Taliban captivity in exchange for five hardcore Taliban terrorist leaders who were at Guantanamo Bay. But after Bergdahl got back, it was quickly fettered out that he had basically left his unit. Some called him a deserter. And after a very protracted investigation, some believe this was actually wrapped up last fall, but the announcement was held off for a while. In fact, he is now being charged with desertion. So, Andrew, we always like to have our people back from captivity, but the price tag now really was five hardcore Taliban terrorist leaders in exchange for one soldier who left his men and possibly was responsible indirectly for some of those other men getting killed looking for him.
Didn't we know this was going to come back in some ugly way? We were eventually going to find out, you know, the skeleton in the closet for this story. It just seemed fishy from the beginning. There was never a clear explanation of exactly what happened. The administration just didn't seem very forthright. And here we are, I don't know, 6, 7 months later after it happened, and we're seeing that, I guess, according to some reports, that the administration was even trying to keep that story under wraps and not have the Pentagon release, you know, Bergdahl status. And so you have that part of it that's troubling, sort of what the administration's role was and what did they know. And there's the next part of it, which is what you said. So then why did they do it? If Bergdahl status was known at this point and we apparently traded these five hardcore terrorists, it's troubling. And again, it's one of the things we keep finding with these sort of controversies and scandals with this administration. The more we learn, the more questions there are about it. You know, I'm still scratching my head as to why they did do it. I'm hopefully not cynical enough to think that maybe they just thought it was a political win. Maybe they just, and I don't know. It's hard to know.
Well, if you look at their actions since that time, they've basically been releasing folks out of Guantanamo Bay with nothing in return. So you might even say that that sadly is the best deal they've gotten in terms of releasing prisoners from Gitmo over the past 8-9 months. And that's not exactly something to smile about, it would seem.
Exactly. And like I said, there are just these stories and that they're never fully wrapped up, whether it's Bergdahl or it's the IRS, whether it's all these things. I mean, they're always looming. And every few months, a new detail emerges, a new revelation comes up. And it never really seems to, you know, be in the administration's favor. And it also, again, never really seems to wrap up whatever the situation is. And for the most transparent administration, again, that claim doesn't seem to be holding up.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. On to 2016. Andrew, you may remember late last year, former one-term Virginia Senator Jim Webb announced an exploratory committee that he was seeking, or at least thinking about seeking, the Democratic presidential nomination in 2016, and that I was immediately met with a massive chorus of yawns on both sides of the aisle because he's obviously considered someone who doesn't really stand much of a chance. What part of the party does he really appeal to? And would he be a strong contender against Hillary Clinton or really any of the other names thrown out for the Democratic side? Well, fear not, Republicans. You've got your Jim Webb now on the other side of the aisle because Bob Ehrlich, the man who was once a congressman from Maryland, then he successfully shocked the political world in 2002, got elected governor, then lost his bid for re-election in 2006 to Martin O'Malley, then lost again to Martin O'Malley in 2010. He's now been up to New Hampshire 4 different times, Andrew, and is seriously considering a bid for the Republican nomination in 2016. I'm sure the donors are going to immediately erase Jeb Bush and all the other candidates from their Rolodex and their speed dials and say, this is the guy we got to latch on to, the guy who lost twice in his home state.
I think when you're assembling your campaign team and you're having your initial meetings, I think one of the first questions you should ask if you're thinking about running for president is, will people have to Google who I am? and I think that's what you might find with the governor. Again, it's impressive he won. You know, he won the state of Maryland as governor. You know, he was overall a pretty good governor, pretty good congressman. But you know, I'm not sure there are people clamoring for him. I'm not sure he's sort of within the, you know, public's periphery of candidates that they're looking to jump into the race. And I don't know what it is about these, you know, now former Maryland governors between O'Malley and him that I guess are trying to gear up for these long shot bids that, again, I don't think there's much of an audience for, but but I guess if I'm going to hold true to the principle that, you know, primaries are always good, then the more the merrier, maybe.
I guess so. Well, both of them, if they both run, go in kind of with their tail between their legs. Ehrlich, obviously, because he lost his last two races. O'Malley won his last two races, both against Ehrlich. But then his lieutenant governor, Anthony Brown, was pretty much considered a sure thing, and he got beaten quite handily.
That's what I was going to say. You know, I mean, if we're talking about a Maryland Republican governor, it may be early, but maybe people jump on the you know, Larry Hogan train.
We're already a week in. You know, it's not too soon.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's already survived a blizzard. So, so far, so good.
Battle tested, I guess. Well, in the Washington metro area, surviving the blizzard probably is battle tested. But yeah, don't look for Larry Hogan to jump in quite this soon. Andrew, it's always fun. Thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back, we think, tomorrow. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.